You, if this is your first time to visit us, to pick up one of these wonderful little pamphlets. It's called the Declaration of the ULT. And in it, you will find a listing of our programs for Sundays and Wednesdays. Briefly, as you see, we began promptly at 11 a.m. this Sunday morning. And in a moment, we'll take up the topic for this Sunday. And generally, you will come in and you will find out just exactly what that topic is on this page here. Today is the 19th. Who are the founders of the movement? That's something that everyone should be familiar with as a basis for studying what is given out here freely every Sunday. You see, we began at promptly at 11 and will be done by noon. Wednesdays, we open the doors at 5:30, so you can come in and visit our library. Straight Line, Theosophical Literature, and other wonderful books you'll find there. And also a volunteer, we're all volunteers, who will explain to you any question or anything that you would like to know. Close the library at 7:30, and then you pass through a room where you'll see lots of books. You see books all over the place. And those books on the middle table are for sale at a very reasonable price. There'll be a student there to explain that and anything else that you would like to know. Promptly. At 7:45, we begin in this room a study class. All are welcome to participate. And at the present time, our studies happen to be in a wonderful little book called The Ocean of Theosophy. We begin to learn the names of the founders and the supporters and what we study, mainly the initials HPP, WQJ, RC are very important to remember. Now on the back of this little yellow circle, you will find information explained, called a declaration. Everybody knows what a declaration is. And it's the United Lodge of Theosophists. And this morning, before we begin our particular discussions, don't forget, anyone, visitors and all, are free to ask questions or make comments. Raise your hand. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work, that end, is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Thank you.
This is officially a panel, but who ever heard of a panel of one? The co-volunteer was kind enough to send her notes on this subject, that illness is preventing her from participating. So we'll read her brief statements. We have just heard the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, but there are parts of it that may need some clarification. The first paragraph reads, "The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement." But who are they? Who are the great founders of the theosophical movement? Well, they are the Mahatmas, those great souls who have passed on this great philosophy from ancient times through various cycles and civilization. These wise ones are also known as the Elder Brothers, the Brotherhood of Adepts, the Great Lodge. They all know each other and work for the good of humanity. The current theosophical movement was started to represent the reality of a great oneness that binds man with all of life, universal as well as local. It reminds us that belief in these great souls is innate in all of us. Some ask, why does humanity need these adepts? The philosophy expounds, especially in the ocean, there is a line of elder brothers who continually watch over the progress of the less progress, preserve the knowledge gained through eons of trial and experience. Knowing of these advanced souls gives us, the younger brothers, an example of and hopes for the progress that is possible. Knowing this, we have a goal, to become as they are, but must be aware that there is work involved achieving this progress. The adepts do appear from time to time based upon cyclic need, when the virtue and development of nations permit. Some ask, why don't they show themselves now? They work behind the scenes because if people knew who they were, we only need to use the example of Jesus to know what the possibilities are that can happen. Plus, the adepts do not interfere with the karma of those they are assisting only in circumstances that will not affect the other's karma. There is documentation of those advanced beings in multiple sources, past and present. But that is our subject for next Sunday's meeting. Historical traces of their work. So moving from the actual meaning of the great founders of the theosophical movement, what we find is, just as we found last week, a problem with semantics, with definitions, with interpretation. As we heard last week, a single word can make a big difference. We heard that over and over it is stated the first object of the Theosophical movement is to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood. But that is not correct. The original statement was to form the nucleus. And if we stop and really think about the difference between a and the, we will see it's vast. Moving now to this subject, there are so many interpretations of the great founders, and we'd like to go through all of them. We've been through this, but Mr. Judge, in his student glossary, which can be found on the Phoenix website, says, adept, as used in these times, is applied to the Mahatmas. But as there are black and white, high and low adepts, that use is erroneous. The word strictly means an expert or master in some particular art or science. In Theosophical literature, the term is generally applied to those occultists who have passed beyond the age of pupillage and have, so to speak, come of age in the study and practice of occultism, being more than chelas, or beginning disciples, but less than full initiates. And then he defines Mahatma, great soul. As applied to beings, it means a perfectly developed sage who has become one with universal spirit. Maha, great, Atma, spirit. Mahatma, the supreme spirit, or great-souled, powerful. So it's called the Lodge of Adepts, but that can be considered a bit of a misnomer. It should be the Lodge of Elder Brothers, of great souls, of Mahatmas. But as long as we know what we mean by an adept, that we mean the full picture of a perfected being, then we can say the Lodge of Adepts. But it sometimes it's hard enough to understand all of this if we're not really careful with our terms. Now, about the Theosophical movement. Again, Mr. Judge, and this is from his articles. There is a very great difference between the Theosophical movement and any Theosophical group. The movement is moral, ethical, spiritual, universal, invisible, save in effect, and continuous. Being continuous, it is to be found in all times and in all nations. Wherever thought has struggled to be free, wherever spiritual ideas, as opposed to forms and dogmatism, have been promulgated, there the great movement is to be discerned. And that leads us to what most people think the great founders of the Theosophical movement represents. And that is the founder of the Theosophical movement in this age, our cycle of theosophy. It is said that, like a triangle, two great souls, two Mahatmas, worked through H.P. Blavatsky, the messenger of theosophy, in our cycle. But if we go back in history, the Theosophical movement goes back into the night of time. And there's, of course, and we have it by dates, but again, this will come up next week. 3400 BCE, Rama. And then it follows in time order, Menes, Krishna, Zoroaster, Buddha. And then we have the lesser cycle, which is kind of amazing when you look at some of the names in the lesser cycle. Pythagoras, Confucius, Hippocrates, Plato. This is the lesser cycle. Anyway, we will hear more about this next week. But what did HPB say? She said that she herself was a messenger, and she used a quote from some famous writer that all she has provided is the string that holds this nosegay together. That, and in another place she speaks of it as jewels, you know, like the sapphire from India, the ruby from China, and all she has brought is the setting so that you can see those jewels. She wrote in The Secret Doctrine, "It is useless to say that the system in question is no fancy of one or several isolated individuals, that it is the uninterrupted record covering thousands of generations of seers whose respective experiences were made to test and to verify the traditions passed orally by one early race to another of the teachings of higher and exalted beings who watched over the childhood of humanity." Now, we're sorry we read that to you, because that just confuses the picture even more. In reality, the great founders of the Theosophical movement are those exalted beings who watched over the childhood of humanity, who began the cycle of giving out the wisdom to their younger brothers, us. It is complicated. We all must agree. But then we're taught that as thinkers, we have been incarnating on this planet Earth for 18 million years. How could it not be complicated? Think of what we have done with all the ideas, turned them into religions and dogmas and rituals and rites, so that cycles have to come where those who can, like H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, can bring back the true picture of what that wisdom really is. In an article called "What Shall We Do for Our Fellow Men," HPB wrote, "What I do believe in is, one, the unbroken oral teachings revealed by living divine men during the infancy of mankind to the elect among men. Two, that it has reached us unaltered. And three, that the masters are thoroughly versed in the science based on such uninterrupted teaching." So we are told that what we have and call theosophy is a portion of the ancient wisdom religion, which is preserved in the hearts and minds of those great souls, but also physically preserved in crypts and caves and held for us as a witness of what has happened in the past. But to complicate things even further, there are those who believe the great founders are the great founders of the Theosophical Society, which happened in 1875, with, of course, HPB and Judge and Colonel Olcott and 13 others. If you're interested in those names, we do have them. However, the reality of it is, and we're given a term, the param, we can't say it right now, guru paraparam chain. It's from teacher to student, to teacher to student, teacher to student. It is from that highest, from the elder brothers of humanity, passing on that wisdom to the elect, and then the wise men of our fifth race taking that wisdom, preserving it, studying it, improving it, and then taking on disciples. And it moves on down until our present day. We have what we have. It's odd to say, in a way because we earned it, but also in a way because humanity is in a desperate condition and needs this food, needs this medicine to begin to heal itself from its selfishness, its sense of separatism, its materialism, and its dogmatism. So the great founders of the Theosophical movement had only humanity itself in mind. It is not the goal of any individual to become a great soul. It is the goal of any individual to serve those great souls in their cause, which is to help humanity. The fact is, though, if we do it properly, we can't help but become a great soul. So our hearts and minds should be on that task. And we'd like to quote something from a student talk that was given here some time ago. Myths and symbols of iconic heroes have demonstrated this adventure to humanity. These iconic heroes, often called sons of righteousness, who sacrificed their just reward of peace by taking on the skins of flesh to awaken a humanity buried in these sarcophagus of matter, far from home, and dead to the knowledge of who and what we truly are. So our task is to make the materials that have been left to us by those great founders, however we think of that, however we attribute a meaning to that, to offer it to mankind, to open up the hearts and minds of humanity. Now, your questions are invited. Yes.
Well, we often hear that when good is done or truth is brought forward, that there's an opposite effect. And we were just wondering, you know, World War I was the beginning of the century, right? The 1900s, and then World War II. Is this just karmic action that's unfolding, and there's really nothing that can hold it back?
Well, you know, there's, again, we're back to meanings and clarifying expressions. It isn't that there's an opportunity for the negative. It's that life is a series of balances. If you move something in one direction, it moves the opposite as well. In other words, for every great expression of truth and wisdom and goodness, there's an opportunity for the opposite. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It means the opportunity, the possibility is there. You know, if you really look into the history of World War I, and it was 100 years ago, exactly, you discover our problem today in the Middle East, because you see what the powers that be, including the United States, decided to reshape the Ottoman Empire. And they made all these decisions based on their own arrogance and opinion. It had nothing to do with the souls who were living there. They chopped up, cut up, and named and made countries. And it is those very countries that they're battling within themselves, and we are battling them, and so are our European forces. Yes, it's karmic, but if you have a karmic thing coming at you, you can alter your own state and condition so that it doesn't affect you the way it would have. So who is to say whether it's because? But we do want to point out that the Theosophical movement, since 1375, when Tsongkhapa brought together the adepts from all over the world and said, we have to save the West, which is sinking in sacerdotalism and materialism. And they began an effort that lasted for 25 years, so 1375 to 1400. Every last 25 years of every century since then, you will find, and again, this is next week's talk, you will find that repetition, the last 25 years. So knowing, as they know, the potential for the opposite of the good, That is why it's limited to just those years. Yes?
Well, what does it mean, independent devotion? We seem to have heard that word independence and declaration and so forth before, and here we're hearing those words again. How does that apply to us?
Well, I think every single one of us knows how to be devoted. We might be devoted to our family. We might be devoted to our job, which seems to be getting rare these days, doesn't it? But we know how to love something and turn our attention to it. In this case, to be independently devoted means you decide for yourself. There is no dogma, no ritual, no tenant. The membership, or really associates card, was mentioned on Wednesday evening. And it says, it'll be what I just myself determine. No one can tell us as souls what to think, what to be. We have to do it ourselves and then honor our choices and grow beyond them, hopefully. So independent, that's the only thing we have, is the right to will and choose. And we give it away all the time, allowing other people to do our thinking. Independent devotion means it is up to me what I accept as truth. Yes?
During the talk, something was said, it almost sounded like a question was being asked during the talk. Did the Mahatmas establish the Theosophical Society? Because right around that time, you were also talking about the 13 people who were involved. And we weren't
16
sure.
altogether.
And
yeah.
We weren't sure, was it the Mahatmas or was it them or was it everybody together? So we wanted a little clarification on the view of that. And then also, there was something said about a guru parampara chain.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always wondered, what is the distinction between a guru parampara chain and the idea of successorship?
Let's go with that one first, because it's fresh in our minds. When a student of a teacher, we haven't the words right now because we haven't refreshed our mind on it, but it does say that every great teacher, on withdrawing from the physical plane, passes that wisdom, knowledge, that point of power on to his or her highest disciple, chela, student. So it doesn't sound unnatural to say that a student of a great teacher would be the one who succeeds that great teacher. But it is not succession in name. It is the power and wisdom that that individual has. It doesn't matter if somebody else says it. They either have the wisdom or they don't. But to go to your second part, it is said that those two Mahatmas were behind the idea of the formation of a group to study these great ideas. The effort made by Blavatsky and Judge was to awaken the hearts and minds. The effort by Colonel Olcott was to create an organization that would allow these ideas to be spread. The others came from various and different backgrounds, but all were determined to discuss or think about or create a society that even considered any of these ideas. Again, there was no dogma, no ritual. You didn't even have to agree that Mahatmas existed. You only had to agree to consider these ideas. Yes?
Regarding that concept of the guru parampara chain, if we come into these rooms and we find ourselves in sympathy with them, and we look back in our lives, we can see some person, some teacher, some friend, maybe a parent, who taught us something that stuck, and it led us to another step, which led us to another step, and finally to this knowledge. That transmission of effect, of knowledge, knowledge, inspiration. Is that also part of the change?
Oh, absolutely. And our physical teacher in a physical classroom, even in the kindergarten, it is the same thing. It is passing on what you know to an eager mind that is ready to learn it. You know, we have no idea, unless we really stop and think about it, maybe even make a little diary for ourselves. How did I end up caring about these ideas, thinking about these ideas? Our own family may ridicule us. Our friends may turn away because sometimes they don't like the idea that somebody else is holding up something that makes them look less than perfect, even if that's not your goal. So we have to look at all of the wonder and the thinking and the hoping and the curiosity and the gifts from others who touched our heart or mind and think about what brought us here. You know, sometimes if you really think about it, the very idea of not having theosophy is terrifying. How could you function in this world without that beauty? Did you have your hand up?
Oh, no,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when when we're talking about a guru parampara chain, then is it literally teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student, one to one to one to one to one, or is it teacher to a plurality of students who dedicate themselves to the teaching?
Well, that would depend, wouldn't it?
Oh,
wouldn't it, though? I mean, you can have, you know, if you've ever read any of the wonderful old books that were written at the time that HPB was working in the world, you read many, many stories of independent gurus or teachers and a solitary student. But you also read of, however it got romanticized, Shambhala, Shangri-La, areas where adepts of whatever level would work together with their disciples and their students. We even had Kung Fu on television. When that first started out, it was very, very reminiscent of the Theosophical teachings, the location of these old and wise beings taking in new and younger pupils and instructing them. So it is both. It is always both. A parent and a child, that is the same method. It is the way we all learn. And what happens if you have a child who never has an adult around them from infancy on? What happens to that child? Yes.
Well, he's never brought out of himself.
Exactly. And we call them feral. The child in us, the child in everyone, needs to be awakened to realize that it can think and choose and act. We don't remember these things as children, how we learned to speak, how we learned to think. We don't remember, but it was a serious thing we took on. Yes?
Well, what awakens then is the passing on or the transmission of ideas, of thought. And so the Theosophical movement then, as we said, is really more the flow or the ebb and cycling of thought down through the ages of a certain kind than it is any one person.
Exactly. There isn't a need for successorship because the one who has wisdom, it will shine forth, whether they say they are succeeding it or not. But again, we're like trespassing on next week. It doesn't seem quite fair. Yes?
I'm wondering if...
Speak up so others can hear you.
It's an ebb and cycle of thought, and spoke about how must be left to think very independently. How can you sort of stop the movement from straying away from its original form if people are thinking independently, possibly coming up with new ideas
that's an excellent question. And if you look at the history of the movement, and that has been a problem and will continue to be a problem. At the top of our periodical, to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, that is where the world has often strayed. You or I might read something and then think about it and decide we know it in a better way or a different way. And so we take those ideas and we put our spin on it, and then suddenly we have everybody following us, but they're being cheated because it isn't credited to the beings that brought it forth, and it isn't spiritual. It's become material then. Someone is selling the ideas. You know, you don't pay anything to come here or any United Lodge. There's no fees, no dues, no membership. Because according to Theosophy, you already own these ideas. They're impacted in a universal way inside your very nature. And what you're trying to do is work your way through the false ideas that stand in the way. Independent devotion to a student of Theosophy really should mean researching and studying what did the Mahatmas give out. And anything that doesn't line up with that, either the Mahatmas were false, or what the person is saying in the present is a falsehood. So it is a complicated issue and requires sharpness of mind, study, energy. But you know, if you know something, if you feel it deeply in yourself, you become devoted to it, and then there's no question. Yes?
Doesn't that phrase, independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, imply that each one of us in our own little sphere is a founder of the Theosophical movement or a transmitter of that?
Yes, but some are not doing that. They're in the process of digesting. It's a very funny point that the object is the establishment of universal brotherhood and the realization of it for yourself. And yet when you begin this study, you have to be selfish. You have to. You have to spend time studying yourself and what's in the way for you from knowing what these great souls know. And you have to begin cleaning up your own nature. So in the beginning, it's very much me, 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 but it's for the purpose of expanding that and becoming a transmitter of. And it doesn't always work. The world can slap us in the face when we try to give it out, but that doesn't matter, because the intention is more important than the actual action. Way in the back.
There's that old saying, clean up your own doorstep
right
before you go off cleaning up others.
Right.
And it does hold true.
And if you don't, people do see very quickly. There are many people who transmit Theosophy but aren't living it or haven't yet brought it into their life, and the one who's hearing them knows that at some level. There's a sort of false note that is played. Yes?
With regard to the free thinkers and how is it that things are kept on track with Theosophy, we think that there's, you know, the word free thinker means different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And
there was an actual group, so
okay,
we don't use that term.
So the idea, though, is free thinker in the sense of a person who attends a church, who is in search of the truth, and isn't feeling, you know, in harmony with what's being said there, he's expected to think the thoughts and believe what's being said anyway, right? So if he frees himself from that, he could be viewed as a free thinker. With respect to the study of theosophy, really there's no one in theosophy who's going to dictate to someone what they have to think in order to be considered a theosophist. However, we do point to the teachings and the truth of the teachings.
Right.
And if an individual freely applies himself and adopts the ideas of the teaching and proves them to himself, then he's freely doing so as a student, and the only authority there is the truth that he's able to see in the ideas anyway.
And one's own karma. I mean, if you are sincere and you want to know and you want to be on the road to wisdom and you're going in the wrong direction, karma is a very good friend. It will trip you up very quickly so that you have to stop and say, wait, what am I doing wrong? I have missed something or misinterpreted something, and go back to the teachings. It is the teachings that we turn to. As a matter of fact, the joy of study becomes clear to you the more you study. If you're new to the philosophy, be sure to read Mr. Bowen's How to Study the Secret Doctrine. It's an invaluable treatise, yes.
You keep on hearing the idea of choice and a free thinker and ideas like that, but we have this knowledge that's being presented to us. So wouldn't it be easier if that knowledge was just given to us? But there seems to be an ingredient here that we have to examine, and I think it's perhaps our will, that we have to will that we want this. We have to take advantage of the circumstances of this life and apply them to ourselves. So we may see these ideas and hear them, but that doesn't mean anything. We have to
use them.
Bring something out of ourselves to bring it in and digest it.
What you're addressing is, of course, the most complicated issue of all, the application of those teachings to yourself and directly in your own life. The fact is that infant humanity, ourselves as thinkers, who have incarnated into the human form, which is not an animal form. We are not animals and never were. The form that is the human form was a special evolution because it required those higher beings to set the spark in that form. When we as thinkers incarnated into the human form, I guess you could say we were innocents, because you come from a state of pure spirituality and you're suddenly in this new and different form and location. And then it was given to us. It is said that infant humanity was impressed with these spiritual ideas that every human being has a concept of brotherhood, even if it's, we'll say, the brotherhood of criminals or of thieves. There's a sense of bonding together. Every human being has a sense of honesty and integrity. But it goes beyond even that. It is said that we were taught the sciences, agriculture. Now, if that sounds ridiculous to you, do a little research and ask yourself, how is it possible in every country, even on little islands separated by oceans from anybody else, in every culture and civilization, there is a cheap recipe that contains all the amino acids that are needed for health and development, whether it's red beans and rice or you know, this in another culture and this in another culture. They're all different, but they all reflect that same basic satisfaction of need for that human form. It is infant humanity being impressed with the arts and the sciences. In other words, a reminder of what's possible on this planet. And then, back to the teacher and the student. What does a teacher do after it has given the lesson? And we're waiting for your answer. You, yes, you.
Me?
Yes, what does the teacher do after imparting the lesson?
Move on. You ask for it.
Yes?
Well, class is over, now you have to do the homework.
Exactly. Go and use what you've been taught. It's just, it's been 18 million years since we've been taught, and we don't seem to be doing that well. We seem to have too much affection and intention in the physical, in the emotional satisfactions. We're not ready to really use what we've been taught. It does require our will. You know, Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher, he reminds us that we only have the right to accept or reject. That is all we possess. That's it. You can take good care of yourself, but you may get hit by a truck. You can have the best brain in the world for knowing and figuring out things, and you may have a stroke. You can't control anything but what you accept and what you reject. And that is will. We use our will against ourselves. We really do. We need to realize we are spiritual beings occupying an important position on this planet. Our job is to help each other and share with each other, but it's also to impress the lives that move through us from the lower kingdom, to lift them up above the lower stage. So we have a big job, but we have all the power of the universe since we are identical to those great souls. The difference is they know their powers and possibilities. We bury ours. Yes?
Well, having heard these words and the declaration and so forth, one time we decided to check things out. And you mentioned in the last 25 years of every century. So we began there, and we began in the 19th century, and it's our understanding that public education actually had a foundation in those 25 years. And then we went back further, the 1775.
But this isn't fair. This is exactly what we were saying. Next week is the historical traces.
In the words, in the Constitution, the Declaration, and so forth, then instead of asking, like, you have to think about it yourself, independent. And when you put the mathematics together, as long as you move along with these teachings and compare them, and the individuals who stood out in these particular cycles, well, you've independently proved to yourself.
Right. Well, we hope people will come and hear next week when you will, you know, discover, if not some historical traces given to you, you will discover how to make that kind of check and verify for yourself. It's a fascinating subject. Yes?
Well, we see in all the religions of the world that there's a kernel of truth in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we see those people adhere to those simple principles no matter what religion they follow. Are they accepted as being a fellow theosophist if they are working in terms of love and compassion for those around them?
It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. Yes, there are people who belong to a dogmatic religion that are better theosophists than those who claim to study theosophy. It is the intention in the heart. It is the why we do something. And there are sincere people in every religion. The problem is the religions set themselves up to stand between the individual and that sense of divinity. Whereas theosophy says there is nothing between you and that. And that's where the problem lies. Because you are a spiritual being, you keep acting with that power against spiritual life. So it's our power, but it's also our problem. Yes?
It would seem that whenever somebody asks us, well, what are you studying? What is theosophy? Or we come in contact with a friend or a family member, and they're really struggling with something, and we know how theosophy can help them. As soon as we are in that situation, are we not part of that guru parampara chain for them? And what is our responsibility?
Well, our responsibility is to be open and honest and fair, but respect the other. Sometimes you have to not mention the word theosophy, because there are people who have the idea that it's strange or mysterious. They're a little put off by it for whatever reason. So sometimes in that assistance to another, you, and it's funny because we were talking about this earlier. Right now, in our world, we are being inundated with books that are almost pure theosophy and give no credit to theosophy. Most of the self-help books are the teachings of the Buddha, but they never mention the Buddha, and they never mention the fact of spirituality. There's a book that just came out called The Missing Messiah, which takes all of the facts about Jesus and then points to what theosophy says, that he never physically existed, that he was a myth and created, and here's why. So books right now are coming out that show all of this. But we are part of that chain of teacher to student, even within ourselves. If before you go to sleep at night, you reflect on what you didn't do that wisely, where you let yourself down, where you disappointed yourself, you are sitting in the position of teacher to student. And if you do it properly, there's no shame, no beating yourself up, but a realization that now I see the problem, now I can fix the problem. How will I go about fixing it? So you are the teacher to yourself. So of course you can be it to anyone else. The thing is to not act as though you know, because what you're passing on is what you've been given, not necessarily what you've totally digested. We still think one of the wisest experiences we ever had in this life, and we use it constantly, and we've often spoken of it here. We were passing by one of the buildings at Penn, and a friend, a janitor, called out, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I said, "I'm having a terrible day." And he put down his tool and stepped forward and looked at me and said, "I thought you knew. You make the day. The day don't make you." We have never gotten over that. It's one of the best lessons we've ever been taught. You're in the middle of a horrible moment. You make the day. The day don't make you. It's how you choose to feel about it, how you choose to react, and we're back to Epictetus. That's all you have is that power. Will I accept this horrible thing, or will I reject that attitude and say, well, it's not a horrible thing, it's a thing. I can learn from this, I can fix this. It's just a problem, bring on another one. So we're always teacher and student simultaneously, and we should remember that. Yes?
So we are the Theosophical movement. If we study and we wish to understand it, then we become that.
Yes. But you know, every human being is part of the Theosophical movement. It doesn't have anything to do with their condition or anything else. They're just not conscious of it. Every human being is a spiritual being living in a delusion that denies their own spirituality. We have often thought that one of the real tragedies is that students of this great philosophy have not impressed the world enough. And we don't mean by banners and grabbing members, that sort of thing. We mean changing the very effect out in life upon all of us. I think Mr. Judge said, give me 500 souls and we can change the earth. Well, obviously then, those of us who have the opportunity are not putting the right kind of energy and enthusiasm. We're sort of living in two worlds. We like the physical life and the personal life too much, so we're half devoted, we might say. Yes?
We have a hard time grasping the idea that each one of us is a part of the Theosophical movement. We view the Theosophical movement as a metaphysical thing that was before we were here. It will be here after we are here. We may be vehicles of the Theosophical movement to give this expression. But not all human beings necessarily are vehicles of the Theosophical movement and give expression. I mean,
we said part of, not via. You can be part of something. You can be in this audience and be sound asleep. You're still in this audience. It doesn't mean that you're getting anything from it. So you can be part of something without being a vehicle of it. Every human being is part of the Theosophical movement. Why? Because that's why they are here as human beings. The whole point, you know, it takes, and again, we're coming up on the ocean of Theosophy, the chapters on this. It takes billions of years to get the earth ready for inhabiting. Why? Just for the purpose of the thinkers to arrive on the scene. It's halfway over before we ever get here. But its whole purpose is for us. And that is the purpose of the Theosophical movement. The movement of spiritual ideas, of wisdom. We're born on this planet and we are condemned to stay here until we face all of our karma, learn all of the things that we have to learn. And if we don't, if we fail to do it, we will be part of the next great earth in the same similar conditions, a form with an opportunity to have will and choice. So we might as well do it now and do it properly. We're just about to end. Another great thing that we read was the prevailing tendency of the human race is to seek a sign instead of an explanation. That's sad, isn't it? We can begin looking within ourselves for that sign. What resonates as true with me? And then pursue it. Is this valid? Is it established out there in the world? Theosophy teaches three great ideas: that all life is one, therefore universal brotherhood is a fact, and all life therefore is spiritual, and that everything comes under law, the law of cause and effect. whether physical, emotional, moral. It's just one law. And that the whole purpose of all of this is educational, instructional. We invite you to come on Wednesday night for the ocean class and next Sunday for the historical traces of these great souls. Meeting is adjourned.